Hi there, I'm Rand Abdel-Fattah from Throughline. If you're listening to this podcast, you know that KQED produces exceptional storytelling that keeps you informed, inspired, and entertained. Their podcasts cover issues from your neighborhood to the entire country and everything in between. Support this work today.
You can help us continue to bring quality podcasts to your ears. Just head to donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
From KQED.
One of the best things about those deep and long-running friendships in your life is you can poke a little fun at each other for your quirks. Like how you're a diehard fan for a chronically losing sports team, or how you put ketchup on everything. Gross. For Nate Puckett, his friends rib him about how he never leaves the city of Alameda.
So I work here, I live here, my kids go to school here. I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, so I don't leave the island for like weeks. And people make fun of me for that.
Alameda is an island, in case you didn't know, and that fact is pretty wrapped up in the identity of some people who live there.
You know, I have a t-shirt that says Islander that's like Alameda themed. There's Alameda Island Brewing. Like you talk about whether, you know, you're on the island or not on the island.
But recently, Nate's sense of place was thrown off kilter. He was eating ice cream at a local spot, Tucker's, and he glanced up at a historical map hanging on the wall. And there, he saw something that shook him to the core. Alameda was connected to what is now mainland Oakland.
It kind of felt like we've been all living a lie. It kind of felt like, no, that's wrong. Alameda's an island. Alameda's always been an island.
But no, the map was not wrong. It was just old. Alameda is not a natural island. And it almost never became an island at all. On this episode of Bay Curious, we're going to find out how and why Alameda was sliced off the mainland. It's a story with enough twists and turns to make your head spin. I'm Olivia Allen Price. We'll jump in just after this.
Support for Bay Curious comes from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. Committed to brewing things the right way since 1980, because when you're a family-run brewery, there's no other way to do it. Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, still family-owned, operated, and argued over. And be sure to stay tuned through the end of the show so you can play our monthly trivia game for a chance to win some cool prizes.
Hey, it's Avery Truffleman, host of Articles of Interest, and I've got to say, I've been a fan of KQED ever since I was a little kid, and I would come out to San Francisco to visit my grandma. It was just what we'd always turn on every time we got in the car, every time we were making dinner and turning on the radio. It was always KQED. And then over the years, I've become a massive fan of KQED podcasts because this is local reporting at its best. These are answers to questions you've always wanted to know, interviews with exciting, unusual voices, necessary journalism, all told with love and care and artistry. And did you know that a majority of KQED's funding actually comes from members? It's just people like you and me supporting the programs they love, while also getting access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. If you want to sign up and be a part of this amazing community, visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to become a member today. That's podcasts with an S. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.
Making Alameda into an island took nearly 30 years, and in the end, the original idea for the massive excavation didn't quite pan out as planned. KQED producer Pauline Bartoloni tells us all about the bumpy journey.
Flooding, legal battles, an economic slump, and raw sewage. They're all part of Alameda's island origin story. It all starts back in the 1870s. Alameda was a big peninsula, jutting out like an outstretched arm from what is now Oakland's Fruitvale neighborhood. Back then, things were pretty quiet where Alameda connected with the mainland. Not many people lived in this marshy region. Think open fields, and maybe just a few estates of wealthy families. Just to the west was a waterway, the Oakland Harbor that opened up to the San Francisco Bay. And it was becoming a bustling center for maritime commerce. More and more ships were arriving since the Gold Rush, bringing all sorts of goods. But navigation in this waterway was tricky. Sediment on its floor would shift a lot, causing all sorts of problems for boats.
The trouble is there were sandbars and there were all kinds of impediments.
Alameda historian Dennis Evanosky took me and our question asker Nate Puckett on a tour along Alameda's waterfront. He says around what is now the Port of Oakland, the waterway was wild and untouched, with sandbars that would ebb and flow with the tide.
Sandbars that just, on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, they'd be over here, on Tuesday and Thursday, they'd be someplace else, and it impeded the ship traffic.
The unpredictable nature of the waterway didn't work for the shipping industry, which wanted to get more boats into the port. Oakland had big development ambitions, says Richard Walker, a professor emeritus in geography at UC Berkeley.
The sense of competition with San Francisco is intense, even though there's a lot of San Francisco investment in Oakland, but you start to create Oakland having its own capitalist class, its own leadership, who have banks in Oakland, have businesses, you know, have shipping companies, and they actually have a local interest. And that grows and grows so that Oakland, you know, by the early 20th century, is really thumbing its nose at San Francisco.
Local congressmen made deals to bring in millions of federal dollars to improve the harbor. Evanosky says the big idea was to dredge a canal all the way across the north side of Alameda, turning the peninsula into an island.
And they planned to build this tidal canal as a scouring channel. What they planned to do was build a dam.
The dam would be built on the far east side of Alameda. And then during ebb tide, when the water is naturally flowing out to the bay,
they were going to open that dam and they were going to have the water, I say, whoosh through this scouring channel here.
Engineers thought this would harness the natural power of tides to flush sediment out of the Oakland estuary and toward the bay, clearing the passage for boats coming in and out of the narrow waterway.
And these aren't necessarily big, huge ships. These could be smaller ships, but they need a place to navigate and turn around.
So that was the plan in the beginning. The project got the green light in the early 1870s, but had a slow start. And over the next three decades, it hit roadblock after roadblock. Early on, the government had to buy out 11 families who would lose part of their estates to the canal. They were offered $40,000 at the time, what is more than $1.2 million today. But one family refused.
They were screwing with his kingdom, if you put it that way.
Patty Donald is the great-great-granddaughter of A.A. Cohen, a railroad industry baron and attorney who owned an estate with a 70-room mansion on Alameda. A.A. Cohen's family challenged the canal project more than once.
Well, he was one of the most powerful people in Alameda at that time because he had bought a failing rail system in 1876, I think.
He sued to stop the canal project and lost, and it went forward. By 1889, the excavation was underway, but quickly suffered another setback. A deluge, literally. The winter that started in 1889 was one of the wettest on record. More than 45 inches of rain fell that year. That's according to a history written by Woody Miner of the Alameda Museum.
Disaster struck on a stormy night in January when Saucel Creek overflowed its banks at Fruitvale Avenue and flooded the ditch and equipment. It took 2 months to pump out the water.
Then they had to deal with public opinion and perhaps the very first complaints from Alameda residents about commuting.
They are digging this canal and there's a problem. People complain, well, if you're going to have this canal here, how are we going to get home?
The canal dredging was disrupting traffic to one of Alameda's main entrances, Evanosky says. So the Park Street Bridge was built first, And then two other bridges came in the decade that followed. As if legal battles, payouts, and flooding weren't enough, the canal project suffered more roadblocks in the 1890s. According to the Alameda Museum's Woody Miner, funding dried up during an economic depression. Then, the project's longtime champion at the Army Corps of Engineers retired. And then, this one's big, new research suggested that dredging deeper in Oakland's harbor would be more effective for boat passage than this idea of flushing sediment out using a dam. While government officials debated next steps, a partially dug, unfinished canal was left. A big, giant trench.
So they had to stop. And this is all dug. And they had to stop.
Now, this is where the raw sewage comes into the picture. Right around this time, people in Oakland and Alameda started installing residential sewer systems, and the waste was flowing right into Lake Merritt and the Oakland Harbor. By the Alameda Museum's account, the waterway became a cesspool.
Fetid water, awash with dead fish, lapped against the dam and seeped into the ditch, emitting a pervasive stench.
Alameda's health officer became the biggest crusader for completing the canal. In 1897, he argued that the stench from the incomplete trench had not only become offensive, but the foul water was killing fish and crabs and posing a health hazard. So government officials soon found the money to put a massive steam shovel to work and finish that canal excavation once and for good. In case you're wondering if during this era anyone ever chimed in about the ecological impacts of ripping through this marshy area.
No. It's nothing like that.
Richard Walker says there wasn't really an environmental movement at this time. Maybe an oysterman was concerned about declining catches.
The conservationists at that time would be, boy, I think, entirely obsessed with creating the first state parks, saving the redwoods. They're worried about mine debris out in the Central Valley.
By 1902, the dredging was done. And 30 years after the plan was first hatched, the canal filled with water. Alameda was officially an island, and residents in the city of Alameda were ready to celebrate. In September of 1902, there were days of fireworks, parades, brass bands, carnival acts, fancy diving, and a procession of 200 lighted boats. Things were different from what was originally envisioned, of course. For one, there was no dam to help flush water out of the estuary.
In my view, they didn't build the dam because they were just tired of this whole thing. And a lot of people didn't think the dam was going to work anyway.
Now, more than a century later, as I walk along the canal with Alameda historian Dennis Evanosky near the Park Street Bridge, the canal water is relatively still. A few boats are docked, but none sail by. This neatly engineered waterway looks like a moat around a castle. It's mostly used for recreation now.
This wasn't natural. It looks very not natural.
Right.
Once
exactly.
You realize it.
Exactly.
Our question asker, Nate Puckett, has been walking with us, listening to Evanosky this whole time. He looks slightly unsettled.
So it sounds like the reason it's an island was a failed idea.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I would say the island city, sort of.
Yeah. The island city by accident.
Right.
Nate clarified later that he found Alameda's island origin story surprising.
You kind of always assume big projects like this are for a very clear and thought-out purpose. And to find that it was kind of an accident or the plan changed so many times is definitely surprising, especially just, you know, because Alameda is so into being an island.
The fact that Alameda isn't naturally an island doesn't bother Nate Puckett too much now. After all, it's been that way for a while. And residents here still bond over bridge and tunnel delays. And over a beer at Alameda Island Brewing Company.
That story was produced by Pauline Bartoloni. Big shout out and thanks to Liam O'Donohue of the East Bay Yesterday podcast and UC Davis geographer Javier Arbona for their help on this story. Facts in this story come from Woody Miner of the Alameda Museum and historical documents from the Army Corps of Engineers and the National Park Service. There's still time to vote in our April voting round. Here are your choices.
I was recently at the Morcombe Rose Garden in Oakland and saw three different official Oakland signs that read, quote, "No glitter." I would love to know what happened at the Rose Garden to warrant so many signs.
Yesterday, I walked with a fellow science teacher on the Great Highway. We commented on the blackish sand made of iron filings. Where does the iron come from?
Who are the DeYoungs? I think they have some crazy stories.
Vote for which question you think we should tackle next at baycurious.org. While you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter, ask your own question, or get lost listening through the Bay Curious archive. Bay Curious is made in San Francisco at member-supported KQED. Our show is made by
Katrina Schwartz,
Christopher Beal,
Catherine Monahan,
and me, Olivia Allen Price. Additional support from
Jen Chien,
Katie Springer,
Caesar Saldana,
Maha Sinad,
Holly Kernan,
and
the KQED family.
I'm Olivia Allen Price. Have a wonderful week.
Hi, Bay Curious listeners. Are you ready to play May's trivia game? Every month, we read a question here at the end of our episode. You can give us your answers over at our website, kqed.org/baycurious, or just click the link in the episode description. Out of the correct answers, we'll randomly choose one lucky winner to receive a cool prize package with Bay Curious swag and Sierra Nevada goodies. Okay, our question for the month is, the world's longest-running pillow-fighting contest was held from 1966 to 2006 in what Bay Area town? Our trivia quiz is made possible by Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. Good luck!
Hey, it's Glenn Washington from Snap Judgment. And if you love what you're hearing, and I know you love what you're hearing, please consider becoming a KQED member. Get special access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. Plus, you'll sleep better at night knowing you did your part for the community you depend upon. It's in you. Please be in it. Visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to sign up now. That's podcast with an S. Thanks.